Blog Talk Radio.
You have tuned in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, psychic medium Sherry, Joe Pinohu, and Joel Walling. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, but also step outside the box a bit and discuss current events. Great conversation among friends.
Welcome to Paranormal Horizons. I hope this is all coming out loud and clear. It was the dashboard seemed to be very confused about what I was doing. So hopefully everyone can hear this. And I think, as you know, this is Joel Walling. As you can read from the description, I'm running the show tonight. Jason and Sherry are taking the night off. And Michael and I have decided to step in and kind of give them the break and talk to you guys on Sunday nights instead of just on Saturday nights. And I believe I have Michael on the line now. Do I?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And you can hear me. So I'm assuming
Yeah. If
you can hear me, they can hear me. Because like I said, I don't know what it did exactly, but it just kind of rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled for like 2.5 minutes. And then finally was like, oh, okay. Yeah, we'll connect you now. So I don't know exactly what's going on with that. As always, it's weird. It's like I said, I'm not totally used to the Blog Talk Radio setup, so I always have to kind of it's always a learning curve to do it again, so to speak. But tonight, well, we thought we'd bring you something a little bit different than what we normally talk. I mean, everything happens on Paranormal Horizons here. We talk conspiracies and different things like that. And we thought we'd bring you a conspiracy that Michael and I have worked on for some time. And it is it's even kind of like, oh, Lord, here we go down the rabbit hole. But we've talked about it for some time, which was the mystery surrounding the death of Kurt Cobain. It's, you know, there's a lot of inaccuracies, mistruths, half truths. I mean, just things like that that are on it. Honest to God. And it's just one of those things where there's been so much talk about it, so much has gone on about it that, well, like I said, Michael and I, what is it, about probably about 5 years now, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
That you and I first got into this
Yeah, it's your
insanity.
Fault.
Yeah, it is all my fault.
Yeah, it's your fault.
Yeah, I take full credit on this one. Basically, at one time we had a YouTube channel doing videos and little things like that. Never really went anywhere with it, and honestly, it's just not something I'd look to get back into. But we had this YouTube channel, and we wanted to focus more on conspiracies and things like that, and we were literally sitting trying to come up with new content, and I remember being on the phone with Michael, and I was like, hey, what do you know about the Kurt Cobain case? I was a Nirvana fan, and you know, he died in April 1994, so I was about 14, 15 years old there, I was going to be turning 14, going to be turning 15. So, yeah, I was a grunge rock head, if that's what you want to call it, you know. I walked around with long hair wearing a trench coat, and that was just kind of the thing. And I remember when he killed us, when he died, you know, and everything around that. And I just thought, hey, you know, that drew my attention. Actually, it was Unsolved Mysteries, I think, is where I first saw it, because they put they put something on about it, because well, I mean, I'm trying to figure out a way to get around this without mentioning a specific name, and I just can't. But basically, we'll go into a little more detail about this person here shortly, but there was a man named Tom Grant, a private investigator that was hired by Courtney Love to find Kurt Cobain, and he kind of went running with the ball to anyone that would listen, swearing Kurt didn't kill himself, that it was either a straight-out murder or a murder for hire. And the Unsolved Mysteries thing put up things like the body wasn't identifiable by the face, that the wallet was open with his driver's license pulled out and sitting on top of it, things like that. The greenhouse was that he killed himself in was barricaded from the inside. And so I heard all this stuff as this was years later. But I heard all this stuff, and I was like, holy crap, it doesn't sound like he did kill himself. And so now we've fast forward to about 2015, 2016. Michael and I are sitting there looking for something to do, and I'm figuring, hey, this would be a good little 5 to 10 minute video, and it'll give us some content for the week.
Meanwhile, 6 years later, here I am.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't think I've ever been more wrong in my life on that one.
No.
Well, you know,
I didn't know anything about it at all. I knew who Kurt Cobain was. I mean, I'd heard of him. I didn't know his music. I wasn't a fan. No offense. It was my kind of stuff. I listened to more like Willie Nelson, and, you know, that was my thing. So I didn't really know his music. I knew who he was. I knew that he had died. And that was pretty much all I knew. And so when I went into it really kind of cold. I didn't know anything. I had no preconceived notion about any of it. And we looked at it. And then, luckily enough for us, there had been so many people in this thing. The Seattle Police Department had actually it's still there. They put the case file online. There's thousands of pages of police report online with crime scene photos. They don't show anything graphic, but they're there. And you can read the police report. You can download it. You can make copies of it. And whatever else, and that's what we went off of. That's what we studied was just the police report. And I have to say honestly, whichever way you want to look at it is what you can make out of it. You couldn't make a case look more like a homicide if you wanted to. And by the same token, you could not make one look more like a suicide if you wanted to. It's the only murder-suicide I ever saw that was actually both. You can make it fit either way, and you can never prove either one or disprove either one.
That's exactly what I tell everyone when I start talking about this. And they're, oh, well, what do you think? I always look and go, what do you want to believe? And actually, funny enough, I was actually talking to a friend of mine last night, and I said that, and he looked at me kind of funny. He's like, well, I want to know what you got from the case. I was like, well, he killed himself with a murder for hire or something. I was like, it literally, like you can literally make both cases. It's
yeah,
the same evidence.
And pretty strong both ways. I mean, it's a fascinating freaking mess is what it is.
I believe it's on SeattleBlotter.com.
Yeah, something like
and
that.
It's in two different files. It's in one case file is like, I think, 700 and some pages. The other is 1,500 and some pages. You can get both files. You can get all of the forensic
documents.
Evidence and court documents, all the forensic pictures, like for the shotgun and stuff like that, everything that is not showing the complete body of Kurt Cobain. In Seattle or in Washington, they don't show those pictures. Those are sealed. The same with the autopsy report.
And you can't get the autopsy report, and I would love to have a copy of that.
Washington State seals autopsy reports. And that's something
that,
you know, with a – what the hell is that one guy's name? The one that used to Now You See It Face-to-Face or something like that, or Now You Hear It Face-to-Face used to host that.
Oh, you mean the other guy that was in this thing neck deep?
Yeah, and I can never remember
his
name.
Was it Lee? Richard Lee?
Richard Lee, that's it. Richard Lee. He has filed several lawsuits to have the full crime scene photos revealed and have the autopsy report made public record. And none of them have worked. He's taken it up to the Washington State Supreme Court. None of it has worked. You know, that's, and like I said, this has been going on now for, we're quickly approaching 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, here it is, 2021, and this happened in 1994. And it still today has legs.
There's so much in it. It's so polarizing because the people that believe that he was murdered are never gonna believe anything else. And the same with the ones that think it was a suicide. Most of them, even if you show them evidence, they still probably won't believe it. I just have to say that there's enough things that don't add up on paper to make you question which way you want to go with it. And we're going to get into some of those things. First off, and we're trying not, we don't want to slander anybody if we can help. I mean, Joe doesn't care.
No.
But
if this was on the Night Stalker, I would go out guns blazing. But I do happen to like and respect both Jason and Sherry. This is I'm in their house, so I'm going to follow by their rules. And that's why I said I had thought of ways to not mention the name Tom Grant, period. But the fact of it is, he is a large focal point in this because of all the weirdness that surrounds it. Some of the weirdness he has caused, and then he was just a blind participant in. And one of the other things I want to get out of the, also I want to pull up, if you're a Cobain fan, by all means, I don't mean to infuriate or insult you anyway, but I'm going to come right out and say it. The man was a drug addict. He was not sober. I know there are things online that say he had sobered up and all of this. He didn't. He was a drug addict. He had left rehab. Everyone that is a main focal point in this is also a drug addict. They may, from what I understand, I believe Callie DeWitt, which is a name you'll hear later, has cleaned up and turned his life around, and I congratulate him and wish him nothing but the absolute best. But it's the facts, and at this time in his life, he was a drug addict. That makes some of the weirdness inherent right there, because there's one thing you cannot depend on, and that's a drug addict. I mean, it's just it, you know. And another thing, and not to sound mean to any of them, Kurt was their gravy train. As long as they were buddies with Kurt Cobain, I mean, Callie DeWitt, for one, was hired. First off, he has no experience with anything. He is hired as the nanny for Kurt and Courtney's daughter, Frances, and he never watches the child. They have another nanny that watches the child, yet he's paid to be the nanny. So right there is kind of like, huh? They give him a place to live. They give him money to watch their child, yet they have an actual nanny that watches the child. That's just giving you a little bit of the mindset of the people involved in this case. You know, so where do you want to start this?
Well, how much time have we got left?
I'd say about 45 minutes.
Okay, well, let's just give the quick rundown of part of it, then we'll go into the rest of it.
Okay.
Kurt Cobain,
how far back do you want to go with that rundown? Do you want to go all the way back to the Rome incident, or?
No, we don't need all that. All that's going to do is muddy the water up.
Okay.
Because that's all that was supposed to do anyway.
Sure.
Let's start soon to the end of the day. We're going to start with the gun. I'll start with the gun.
Well, then if you're going to start with the gun, I think we should go back to the first or the second police call.
Well, that's part of that, too.
Because
firearm situation, yeah.
I can't. I don't have any notes because, well, my computer decided to go tits up tonight right before I have to go live, so I had to recover a computer from complete hardware failure. So I'm behind the curve.
I've got hard copies of all the reports in front of me.
So what was it in March? The police were called
to... hang on, let me see if I can read the dates on here. It was March 19th. Year.
Be 1994.
But, yeah, probably.
Well, it was the year he died, and this was right before he died.
Yes.
They were called.
Yeah.
Him and Courtney had gotten into a argument. Apparently, it had turned physical on both of them's behalf. And Kurt locked himself in their bedroom with the baby, Frances. Courtney calls 911 telling them her husband beat her and said that he had said he was going to kill himself and locked himself in the bedroom with their daughter, their guns. Mr. Peaceful, second most peaceful man since John Lennon in music, was a gun guy. He made no secret of it. He liked to shoot guns. He had guns. So the police show up. They go in. Kurt opens the door for them. Kurt tells his side of the story. Courtney tells her side of the story. They had been there before on several occasions. We're not going to go into all that crap, but they had been there before. So if anyone out there knows anything about police, once they've come to a residence two or three times, they already have decided, okay, these are those people, and there's no use in us wasting our time taking anybody to jail or any of that. But what they did do was confiscate Kurt Cobain's guns. They took the guns with them. I don't think it's necessary to give a rundown of the weapons. I believe there was, what, four?
Well,
taken.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. There were four guns and an ass ton of ammunition of various calibers.
Okay, so like I said, four guns taken from the residence.
Along with some narcotics.
Yeah, well, which was the main reason of the fight.
Yeah. So that took care of the guns he had. Then he was scheduled to go into rehab.
Well, she had an intervention.
No, him, Kurt, I mean, Kurt went to rehab.
Yeah, Courtney had an intervention, which kind of pissed him off at the beginning, but he did agree to go to rehab. And that was on, March? Well, actually, it was agreed to go one date and actually didn't go and ended up going another.
Yeah. I've got that here, too.
So let's just, in the interest of time, we'll fast forward to him actually going to rehab and the purchase of the gun. And if I'm not mistaken, that was actually, wow, hell on. I don't know.
The gun was bought on March 30th of 94 by Dylan Carlson, who was Kurt's friend. Kurt didn't buy the gun in his own name because he was afraid that if he did, that the cop would come and confiscate it. It was bought under, Dylan bought it under his name. Was bought at Stan Baker Sports. It was a Remington Model 11, 20 gauge, with a polychoke on the end of it, which is a device that you can tighten up or loosen up to open up the choke. So the pattern will be tighter or looser depending on what you're using it for. He also had a box of 20 gauge, 2 3/4 inch, number 8. Winchester shot shells that were they're not on the receipt, so it was probably given to him by the store owner. Usually, most of the time when you buy a gun, because I've bought guns for years, and you buy a new gun, usually the owner of the store will invest and give you a cheap box of ammunition to go with it, so he figures you're going to come back and buy more along the way. So it works. It's not on the receipt that the ammunition was bought. If it was bought, it was bought on a separate receipt, which we don't have, or else it was just given to them along with the price of the shotgun. I've often wondered about that because normally to keep track of inventory, you would list it somewhere. Even if you didn't charge for it, you would list it on your sales tickets so you could keep track of your inventory, which wasn't done here.
Yeah, that's a little bit surprising, honestly.
It is surprising in that respect, but I've never been able to rectify that. So then when Kurt left to go to rehab, that was on, let's see here.
On March 30th was when he bought the gun
He left. The driver of the taxi, the limousine service, that drove Kurt to the airport. For whatever reason, Kurt put the shotgun in the house and didn't leave the shells with it. He had the shells in his pocket or in his bag, and he knew that he couldn't take them on the airplane, so he gave the shells, this box of shells, to the limo driver. The limo's driver, named was Harvey Ottinger. He worked for the limo service. And he took a box of shotgun shells from Cobain because he couldn't take them on the airplane. And he told the police that he still had them if they were needed. According to the police report I've got, or the report from the police, it doesn't say here that the police ever asked for the shells back or that Mr. Ottinger was ever interviewed again So I don't know if they ever verified the shells on it. It only comes into play for one thing. If the gun and the first box of shells, the shells he got from the store where the gun was bought, the ones he gave out, was it a full box or were there three missing? Did he load the gun and then have the other remaining 22 shells in the box? And there are 25 shells in the box of shotgun shells. You take three out to load the gun, which the gun held three. One in the, you know, you put, you know, you load it, it'll hold three. Two in the magazine and one in the chamber. If he loaded the gun with three, that left 22 accounted for in the box he gave away. But we don't know if he loaded the gun or not out of that box. If he did, then the second box of shells that we're going to talk about later on had 25 accounted for out of it, which means that there's some screwy stuff going on. Because you can't have three shells missing out of one box and three shells missing out of another box unless somebody took them. You follow what I'm saying? See, we don't know this. They never checked it. And there's no way of knowing now. You still with me? And we lost it.
Hey, everyone. We've had a little bit of technical difficulties. Apparently, what happened to Jason last weekend happened to me. Sitting here trying to talk to Michael, and he just couldn't hear me.
You there?
You back, Michael?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know what happened. I was talking, and it just was, you were just gone.
Everything sounded fine. I tried to answer you twice, and it just didn't, you couldn't hear me. There's just
no other way
to put it. So I'm still on as the host. Well, remember this happened to Jason, too, last weekend.
Yeah.
I think it was the weekend before one. He said he had to call in. That's exactly what I just had to do. I'm on my cell phone now, called in as a guest, and that's how we're doing the show. Exactly what Jason had to do. But
okay.
I was going to add to that. Because I've always been a little bit more on the baddie side of it. You know, and one of the things I found extraordinarily weird in all of it was one simple fact. Dylan Carlson, everyone says, oh, that's Kirk. That was Kirk's best friend. Okay, you and your buddy are riding to the airport. First he goes and buys you a gun. Now, he buys you a gun. Granted, you get him the money for it, but he buys the gun. And you look at him and go, I'm going to go put this in the house. You stay in the car. And I've always found that weird. I always have found that weird. I don't understand. If this guy's supposed to be his friend, why? Why would you have your friend wait in the car for you to go in the house and do this stuff?
Yeah, I know.
It also leads me to think he gun probably was not loaded, because most likely he left the shells in the car and went into the house with the gun.
Yeah, it isn't so much whether it was or not. The problem is they didn't check.
True. And let's face it, like we've said on a thousand times, basically if you want to see how not to do an investigation, this is how you do it. I mean, I've literally told people, if you want to get away with murder, take them to Washington. It's not really that bad.
We looked through this thing. We pulled over this case file for a solid freaking year. Joe's in Canada in the middle of nowhere. I'm in South Carolina. We're on the phone every day, all day long, sometimes half the night, well into the freaking night, pouring over credit card reports and police reports and all kinds of crap. For about the 9,000th time, I read over the Washington State Crime Lab report for the ballistics. And I look at it, and I said, wait a damn minute. That's wrong. Because they had on the police report, and I'll read it because I got a copy of it, one Remington Model 11 Sportsman 20-gauge self-loading semi-automatic shotgun bearing serial number 108-8925, period. They had that. And one fired Winchester AA 20-gauge 2.5-inch shot shell. It's not a 2.5-inch shell. The 2.75-inch shell. They do make 2.5-inch shells. 2.5-inch shells are old. Well, they were back in the 30s, 40s, 50s. They don't make them. The standard length of shell now is 2.75 inches. 2.75, 3, and 3.5. 2.75 expands 3. 3 expands to 3.25. You know, and that's how that, because it crimps, it folds up. And when it folds up, when it unfolds, when it's fired, is the length. This is wrong. What they listed here is a 2.5-inch shotgun shell. Actually, it's probably the dram equivalent is 2.5, the dram weight of the shell. But in any event, it's a typo, but it's obviously wrong. But they were famous for messing up things in that lab anyway. They had several things screwed up. Yeah. But we did
They did have one of their examiners become the prime suspect in a child molestation case, because he wouldn't wear a mask when he was doing examination of evidence, and he spits when he talks. That's a true story, folks. Look it up. This actually happened that way. So he actually contaminated all of the evidence, and this guy ended up getting off.
You know, there's a lot of stuff here. Tom Grant was hired by Courtney Love to track down Kurt Cobain and Kurt Cobain's credit card.
On Easter Sunday.
And she called, and he was, I guess, for whatever reason, either she just got lucky and called him, or she just went down the list of private investigators and thought he found one answer. And he was in Calgary.
But
I don't know that.
He did hire, like I said, that was on Easter Sunday. I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound mean, but damn, Easter Sunday. Of course, just kind of going back with a little bit of a fill-in of the timeline. Like we said, that Kurt had gone to, was going to the airport fly to L.A. to the Exodus Rehab Center for a 28-day program. That was on March 30th. So March 31st, he has officially begun treatment at the Exodus Rehab Center. He meets with the counselors, blah, 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 and all of that stuff. Courtney, at this time, goes to a lock-in detox, is what she calls it, which is basically what she did, was rent out the top floor of a motel in Los Angeles and have a drug and orgy. That was on the 31st. too, because Francis and Courtney were already in Los Angeles, and Francis was brought to by the nanny, not Dylan Carlson. We'll get into that again later. But we were brought to the rehab center by the nanny to see Kirk. Now, on April 1st, Kurt Cobain leaves rehab. At about 7 p.m. in the evening, he tells the staff he's going out, and he jumps the wall and he's gone. By 8:47, there is now Courtney says he never called her. They had no contact. But I've seen in the police report it did mention that they had asked the people at the rehab center there, and they had asked the people at the hotel, and they said, yes, he had called for her room. So that is kind of bullshit. But anyway, he leaves a message for Courtney saying she needs Elizabeth's phone number. Elizabeth's phone number is, and that is at 8:47 p.m. Now, no one really knows anything about this. There again, we're moving ahead. Now, April 2nd, then this is all happening in the middle of the night. A lot of the timeline will be happening, but it's happening in the middle of the night. On Saturday, April 2nd, 1994, Kurt arrived back in Seattle. And that's where he got back to his house at roughly at 1:30 a.m. Now, this is where we bring in the nanny who is not the nanny. His name is Michael DeWitt, but he went by Cali. This man, as I said, lived in their house, him and his girlfriend, because they were supposed to be taking care of friends. He didn't do it. So, again, Kurt was a gravy train. You know, he paid the guy to do this. They didn't do it. Him and his girlfriend were in the house at 1:30 a.m. when Kurt Cobain arrived. They say in the police report, they say in everything you read, ever said, that they had no clue he was ever there. So how this person, until later, actually, I believe, they said he left it in a note, didn't he?
Yeah.
A fair note. That how did you get it without me knowing it? And this note wasn't found until or the day of the
death. And then, oddly enough, Kurt got in about 1:30 in the morning, and then another driver from Great Top Cab Company went to the house on that same morning, 4/2/94. At 7:30 a.m.
Yeah.
So between 1:30 a.m. and 7:30 a.m. is what, 6 hours? So 6 hours after he was dropped off, the cab picked up someone. Now, he doesn't say who it was. He just says it was someone he thought did not match with the residents. They drove around a place. They drove around looking for a place to buy bullets, but weren't able to find one. The male told the driver that he recently had a burglary and needed to buy bullets. At 8:30 hours, the driver dropped the man off in the area of 145th and Aurora because he was hungry and wanted something to eat. That's right around, I looked on the map from back then, that's right near where Denny's restaurant was. And the suicide note, for lack of a better term, whatever you want to call that, rambling three-quarter length page long thing was written on the back of a placemat from the Pancake House. So that would have been wherever whoever the male was, supposedly Kurt, had breakfast. The shotgun shells that were bought to replace the ones that were given away were bought from Seattle Guns. And Seattle Guns was located right around 145th Street, not far from where Denny's was at. So it's conceivable that that's the same place He was within walking distance of wherever he was at and bought the shells. Now, there are other parts of the story that don't make a lot of sense. And a lot of it don't make sense, but when Kirk's body was found, and really, you can't go into it without talking about Tom Grant, because I think that Tom Grant was supposed to find the body, and Tom Grant didn't.
I have to agree with that. Because after, okay, they do show that there was contact, and even DeWitt at one time said he called Courtney Love to let her know Kirk was back. He did say that he didn't do that until the third or the fourth. But he did tell her that he was back. So, yeah, he Grant's hired, and he's sent to Seattle to find Kirk. And he told he needs to meet with Dylan Carlson, who is supposedly Kirk's best friend. And that he's going to show him what all of these places Kirk hung out at. And apparently the story that he got from Kirk or from Courtney Love was completely different than what he got from Dylan Carlson. You know, he only goes to this type of place. No, Kirk only goes to this type of place. So, again, I'm trying to be polite here. As I said, I'm in someone else's home, and I'm not gonna do what I would normally do here. But I can't quite figure out if Grant was getting the runaround and just didn't realize it, or if he knew he was getting ran around and didn't give a shit, or if he just was too dumb to figure it out. Because you have him being led around by the short curly, the Dylan Carlson, and I mean, everyone's talking about how, when you read this stuff online, you see that they're like, oh, no one can find Kirk. No one can find Kirk. Yet you have his drug dealer saying, oh, I found Kirk three or four times. You have a bandmate of his saying, I saw Kirk. You've got restaurants saying, Kirk and a whole bunch of his friends came in. We've got the check. You know, this kind of thing. So, either A, Dylan Carlson is not his friend, which is a possibility. I mean, until I started really looking into this thing, I'd never heard this guy's name. You know, they actually talk about the people who he was more friends with were like Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, who was Nirvana's original drummer. They were close. You know, this kind of thing. But once Kirk got into heroin, the other band members started distancing themselves more. I mean, yeah, you know, even Dave admits he was into some stuff too at the time, but he wasn't as far in as Kirk. But that's just where, you know, that's where I keep coming to this. It's like I am not a private investigator. I don't even play one on TV. But my first thought is I'm going to get in touch with his mother. Let's face it, they live in Aberdeen, Washington. Aberdeen and Seattle are not that far apart. Why wouldn't you call his mother, his grandparents? They all live there. You know, like I said, his bandmate. You know, why not call or go see these people? He just let himself get led around blindly by this guy looking for his next heroin bit. You know, so that's where I can't figure this out. And I already see that we're not even going to be able to get into the tip of this iceberg.
We don't have time.
We have some, no. We haven't even got to his death yet.
No. You can't do this in an hour. It takes longer than that.
So we will, I think we'll do this again next weekend, next Saturday on the Night Stalker. I mean, we're not done yet, but we still got like 10, 12 minutes. So, I mean, but I'm just trying to think of how to condense this down.
You really can't condense it too much. It won't make any sense.
That's exactly it. Because, we can go on and finish out at least the timeline. Because I've been looking at that here. You've got, you know, now we're up till the 6th and the 7th is when Tom Grant goes to Seattle. She says now, this says Courtney Love did tell Grant that she had seen or that DeWitt had called and told her that Kirk was in the house on the 2nd. So Grant goes to Seattle and meets up with Dylan Carlson. On the 7th, they search the home for Kurt Cobain. Now, that comes into another problem. Because Kurt was dead by then.
Yeah.
Which also leads to another big question. How in the hell did somebody shoot a shotgun that close to a house in a residential area and nobody knew?
Well, I don't know. It ain't the first time that's ever happened, though.
Very true. But especially if you have somebody, two people in that house at the time. If they had shot that corner, it should have alarmed them. Something.
Well, I don't know. A lot of people don't know about guns, but I can tell you this from experience. I know guns. And it doesn't matter if it's a 12 gauge or a 20 gauge, or if it's a 410 gauge, or if it's buckshot, or it's bird shot, or whatever kind of shot it is. A 20 gauge shotgun with bird shot indoors is loud as hell.
Yeah.
There's no way you could be in a house, even if you were upstairs and I was downstairs. I mean, if it was a huge-ass English manor, like a castle or something, and you were all the way across it, and it was raining and thundering outside, maybe, you know. But to say that you couldn't hear a shotgun blast inside a house, that's, granted, they probably were strung out on dope or something. They might not have heard it, but.
And he was in the greenhouse above the garage, so he wasn't exactly in the house, but he was, 10 feet, 15 feet from it?
Yeah, I mean, conceivably, they may not have heard it, but still. But I think Tom Grant was supposed to find a body. The only thing about that is this. If Tom Grant was supposed to find the body, then somebody knew the body was there.
Yeah. Well, see, this is going to throw in a little.
And that in itself rules out the complete possibility of it not being homicide. Because that puts somebody else there. I mean, if he goes to the greenhouse by himself, shoots up his heroin, says, fuck it, puts the gun in his mouth, and pops himself, okay, he's by himself. That's suicide, there's no question. He's by himself. But if there's somebody else in the room, then there's always a chance. You have to admit, if there's someone else in the room with you and you don't know what happened, there's always a chance that somebody else pulled the trigger. You know, I mean, it's just, it's hard to, you can't completely dismiss it. Because you just can't.
Well, now we're getting into the, we're going to get into this, and this is going to be after where we leave it at. On Friday, April 8th, electrician Gary Smith began work in the greenhouse at the Seattle home circa 8:40. Smith looked through the balcony window of the greenhouse and saw a body laying on the floor. At first, Smith thought it was a mannequin. Slowly, Smith realized there was blood in the ear and a shotgun laying across his chest. Smith called his boss, who had, instead of calling police, called the local radio station, where he speaks to the radio DJ, Marty Ramirez. Station employee believes the call was a hoax, however. Just to be on the safe side, the police are called. Within an hour of the news, the body was discovered at the Seattle home, Kurt Cobain, spread around the world. Now, this, we do have a little bit saying that Courtney kind of went apeshit, for lack of a better term, to get this guy there to work on the greenhouse. She insisted that he go there and start in that exact spot. And that leads very highly to the possibility that somebody, whether it was by accident or what, somebody knew his body was in that damn greenhouse that he had been found before. Because, like I said, the autopsy report or the medical examiner said that there was a 24-hour window of when he could have been killed or could have died, rather.
Yeah.
So there's
question,
no thing, you know, when the exact
question,
date was.
You know, but the questions that come up are, there are so many questions. I mean, why would it matter if it were an outside party that found him as opposed to someone that was staying in the home? What difference would
that's
it make?
Not, yeah, and I understand the thing, the thought behind that, but you have to put yourself in the shoes of an addict.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Their first thought was, oh, my God, if I call the police and tell them Kirk killed himself or I found a body, they're going to search the house, they're going to find my stuff, and they're going to take me to jail.
Yeah.
And see, that's the thing when you're dealing with addicts. You've got to take reason and logic out of the equation. And that's the truth when you're dealing with an addict. Like, oh, well, why didn't Dylan show him the greenhouse? I just probably didn't think about it. You know, like I said, you cannot add logic to them. Now, why in the hell did Courtney Love supposedly cancel his credit card so he'd be easier to find? You go to cash? Cash is easy to track. You know? Credit cards have a time, date, list, stamp of where they were used, what store, and all of that. Cash has nothing.
Except for this one, because I got the credit card report here, and it's a damn mess.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. She's saying her logic was, if I cancel his credit card, he'll be easier to find.
Yeah. I guarantee you, I don't know about you, but...
How is that?
I guarantee I don't know about you, but if you gave me a suitcase full of cash and said go, you never find me.
Yeah, you never find my ass.
You know?
That'd be the end of it.
You know, if I had unlimited cash, because you can't trace cash.
No, and that's just it. And that's one thing that Grant did say that made sense to me. He was like, you know, because I looked at her and I was like, you want me to sign him, but you canceled his credit card. Why the hell did you do that? Well, I thought he'd be easy to find. In what world? Like I said, credit cards give you a itemized statement of when they were used.
And then, of course, there's a question of how many credit cards he had. Because if he only had one card, and it was a Visa card, and she had the Visa card with her when she was arrested that day in Los Angeles.
That's something else that and that's something else I've kind of thought about. Maybe we've misunderstood that, and he misunderstood that, because according to Grant, this is coming from Tom Grant, Courtney told him that Kurt only had one card. Maybe Kurt did only have one card. But I could always request a duplicate of my card and give it to somebody else. I mean, I wouldn't think twice about giving my wife a credit card with my name on it.
Yeah, but usually though, when that happens, you have like a man and wife don't have a card linked to the same account.
But it'll
have her name on it. It'll have both names. It'll have her name on it, on her card, because she has to sign it. If you think about it, if Courtney has a card that says Kurt Cobain on it, when she buys something, the name on the card has to match the name on the receipt, which means she has to forge the name to get it.
Yeah, but again,
that's why when your wife has a card linked to your account, it's a separate card number with her name on it linked to your account. It's not the same card. It's just linked to the account.
This is what I'm saying, though. And yes, she would have to find it, Kurt Cobain, and I don't think she would have thought twice about doing it. But this is what I'm saying, because you got to remember, Courtney was a rock star too. Hold was huge at the time. So you already have her with some president on her own, including her own bank account, her own credit cards, and those things. But she had a tendency of overspending. So this is, you know, like I said, what if you just went, you know what, here, take this one with you. If you ever need it for the baby, you've got it. It could be possible that when she told Grant that was the only credit card he had, she actually meant that was the only credit card he physically had. Just think it.
Because he had two bank cards for drawing out.
Yeah, he had ATM cards. This is before the day and age of the Visa debit card. Well, it is 11:02, and I'm guessing this is going to be insanity for one night. Like I said, if you're interested in hearing more about this, we're going to talk about it next weekend on the Paranormal Night Stalker, 10 p.m. You can hear us anywhere you find podcasts or listen to us live on Twitter or on our site, www.nightstalkerpod.com. Okay. Jason and Sherry, or Jason and somebody, I don't know exactly. I know Sherry's a little under the weather. Sore throat. She's put a lot off, so I'm not sure what she's going to have to catch up with. If she's going to be back next week, but I believe Jason will be. Other than that, for Michael Smith and myself, I want to say thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you again next weekend.